I now use the hashtags Broken Times and Broken Post. The headlines in both papers, I think, are constantly off, constantly trying to soft pedal what's going on. Yeah. You're not going to like what I'm saying next, but we are in the middle of a totalitarian fascist coup in this country.
Yes.
And when we don't call it that, when we soft pedal it, when we don't have a real discussion about it. At least here, I could say those words. We could have that discussion. You will not see those words in the New York Times or the Washington Post.
Actually, I liked what he said next. And I liked that he said it on CNN.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right.
Oh, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. To the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep. And so we meet again from Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles. This is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains, KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADRM, Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950, KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets for you on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com, where we are now in our 22nd year of troublemaking and muckraking, thanks to you and your support. Welcome to the Bradcast. Okay, Desi Doyen, 2 days in a row. 2 days in a row, we get a fresh green news report for folks.
I know. It's like Christmas.
Given that, for you anyway, given that we had a bumpier first one this week to yesterday, but our second one of the week is coming up a bit later this hour. It will not be bumped. It shall not be bumped. but first, by the way, at the top of the show there, that was journalism expert and Professor Jeff Jarvis saying that we are in the middle of a fascist totalitarian coup. He's kind of got that just right. I'm glad he was able to say it on CNN at least that time. We'll see if Jeff Jarvis is back soon on CNN or not.
Sad, but true.
But, you know, as you likely know, we are often critical here at the Bradcast and at bradblog.com of the corporate mainstream media as we try to hold their feet to the fire for too often ill-serving the nation. We try to hold their feet to the fire because, frankly, we would like them to do the same with public officials that they have access to where we may not. We try to hold their feet to the fire because we need them to do their job. And yes, we rely on them in our own coverage here on the Bradcast to help us better understand what's going on so we can then further inform and educate and offer context to that reporting to the public, a duty that, all snarky comments aside, I do take pretty seriously. Right now, the media and free speech and press rights are themselves under attack, both from the Trump White House and from within, as billionaire owners of a number of critical outlets are reshaping those corporate media outlets to be, in a phrase, more Trump-friendly, which, frankly, I find appalling. And we will get to, a whole bunch of related matters momentarily with my guest, another media expert, the great Dan Frumkin, momentarily. But first, I do want to underscore the importance of a free press, including, yes, the corporate media. Outlets like the New York Times, CNN, Washington Post, AP, Even as independent media outlets like, well, us, also, we all play a role right now at this perilous moment in our nation and world's history. Yes, we are in the middle of a fascist totalitarian coup, so we really need everyone on board here. To that end, a couple examples of important roles played by the corporate media as fact checkers, for instance, with a loud platform to help, hopefully help Americans understand how the occupants of the White House are now simply lying to them about just about everything. Here's one example from CNN's indispensable instant fact checker, Dan Dale, following Trump's first bizarre so-called cabinet meeting, really a kiss-up meeting, with the cameras turned on at the White House on Wednesday, where Trump, as he does, just told one independently verifiable lie after another.
There was just so much in this cabinet meeting, so let me run through some of the big ones. We heard this claim again from the president. He's been saying it over and over in the past week, that the U.S. has provided Ukraine with $350 billion worth of aid, and that this is about three times what Europe collectively has provided. That is not true. The $350 billion number is not true. Nor is the idea that the U.S. has provided way more than Europe. So according to a think tank in Germany that closely tracks this aid, it is Europe that has collectively provided more aid to Ukraine than the U.S. has. In terms of aid committed, it's about double, about $260 billion for Europe to about $125 billion for the U.S. In terms of aid allocated, it's narrower, but Europe still leads. The president also repeated this claim he's been saying over and over, that the U.S. ranks 40th out of 40 in some education rankings. I specifically asked the White House what those rankings were. They were not able to point to any of them. It appears not to exist. In fact, the U.S. Is above average in reading and science, and below average, though far from last, in math rankings, even of wealthy countries. He said the U.S. is the only country with mail-in voting. It simply isn't. He said the U.S. took in hundreds of billions of dollars from China in the tariffs he imposed in the first term. In fact, Americans paid those tariffs. Americans make those tariff payments, and it's not true that Trump was the first president to impose tariffs on China. He said that we lose 300,000 people to fentanyl deaths every year. In fact, it's about 60,000 deaths per year. Still a tragedy, of course, horrible, but nowhere close to what he's saying. He said the European Union does not take American farm products. In fact, it is the fourth biggest market for U.S. agricultural exports, of $13 billion per year. He offered another alternate history of the European Union's formation, saying it was formed to screw, take advantage of the U.S. In fact, it was formed with U.S. support, so not even close to correct. And so I don't even know where to go from here. He said there was no inflation when he left office. It was low, but it existed, about 1.4%. He said a lot of the U.S. fentanyl comes from Canada. In fact, 0.2%, about 43 pounds worth, came from Canada, so just a tiny number. And he repeated this claim we heard a lot during his presidency, saying that President Obama merely provided Ukraine with sheets. He used to say pillows in sheets, rather than actual military aid. In fact, the Obama administration provided things like counter-mortar radars, armored Humvees, tactical drones, so it was not simply pillows and sheets. And I'll give you one more. He said that, you know, the million people who didn't respond to this email, this five things that you did last week email from Elon Musk team, may not exist. Mm-hmm. I guess it's possible the U.S. government is paying some people who don't exist, but I think it's important to note that we had numerous agency heads, department heads, telling their employees not to respond. So the simpler explanation is that people were instructed not to do this rather than them being, you know, fictional, non-existent human beings.
That was Daniel Dale in 3 minutes trying to respond to that more than hour-long, cabinet meeting where the cameras were turned on, a performance, really. Indispensable. In 3 minutes, all of the facts that he was able to check, what it means, whether people are able to absorb all of that, I don't know. A lot of them we have heard before. Poor guy. I have a feeling he could have gone on for about 15 or 30 minutes.
Oh, sure.
Easily with that. But that's important. That's an important role of the corporate media, too. And especially in his case, where he can come on right after a Trump performance, whether it's a cabinet meeting or in the Oval Office or, you know, the sort of State of the Union we're coming up to next week. Hooray. Can't wait for that. Having someone like Dale to come on and correct the record quickly as much as he possibly can, and then he does it again on the website in more detail with links and so forth. So
yeah,
that's
incredibly helpful.
Yeah, it is, and it's an important role. You know, that large outlets like CNN can and do play. And then there is the critical role that news outlets like, yes, the Washington Post still play in, yes, supporting democracy by making sure it does not die in the dark, even as the venerable paper's billionaire owner, Jeff Bezos, seems to be working hard to turn those lights off. But to underscore the key role that they still play for all of us, even now, at least for the moment. On Tuesday, Trump's newly sworn in Secretary of Veterans Affairs, former Republican congressman from Georgia, Doug Collins, released this video on Elon Musk's social media site, crowing about the gutting of the Veterans Affairs Department by, yes, Elon Musk's Doge Bros in recent days.
Hey everybody, you know, it's been fast paced and I keep coming to you with what we're doing. And today I've got a number. I got some big news for you. And look, this is why we talk about efficiency and getting the job done for veterans here at the VA. Right now, I've just been told we are just the first step of almost 2 billion. That's billion with a B that we found in contracts that are cutting. Those are things that we're saving now that we can put back into healthcare benefits, making sure that we're doing what the VA is supposed to, and that is health and veterans benefits. You know, stands to reason. But hey, you got to see this. I've been giving this report. It says we were taking millions of contracts and dollars in contracts to create things like PowerPoint slide and meeting minutes. Folks, if you don't know how to run PowerPoint slides, learn. It's a tutorial on your computer. Go learn for free. It's okay. Take your own notes. Wow, I'll send you one of my pencils if you need one. But we're not paying millions of dollars for consultants to do this for us. Also, I found out coaching and training. Millions of dollars in contracts for coaching and training. If you need coaching and training, that's what you have in a supervisor. And if your supervisor can't coach you and train you in their job, then I tell you what, let me know, I'll come help you. We'll be ready to go. And also, this last one kills me. It was millions of dollars for executive support. You know, I love you and I support you, but we can figure out how to do things on our own. We don't need outside people coming in to help us with executive support. Look, these are coming, there's going to be more coming. This is going to have some details that are going to be coming out for you. And also, there's more contracts coming. So this is just the first of all, right at $2 billion. We got almost there. There's going to be more coming. But let me let you know, don't feed the line of what DC's wanting to tell you. We are putting money back to veterans' health, back to veterans' benefits. And don't let nameless sources, even senators and House members who want to scare you and media who want to perpetuate the line, we're taking care of the veterans. I promise you that from day one.
Do you, Doug? Do you?
Are
sure
you, are
you taking care of the veterans?
You know, it really, what he, everything he said just there, anybody who's ever worked in an office, it all sounds like a really nightmare scene out of the TV show.
$2 billion. $2 billion with a B.
Well, you don't need anybody to teach you how to use any of that stuff. I'll do it.
So sure. That was very cheery. That was wonderful. And obviously he's delighted that he's saving $2 billion that can be used to on health care for veterans. Well, on Tuesday night, after that announcement from the new head of the Veterans Administration, giddy about all of the services that have been cut by the Doge Bros, the Washington Post reported what it really actually meant regarding all of these outside people who had now been cut off. Here was the headline from Washington Post. Doge to cancel government contracts that help veterans, records show. Records show the 875 contracts included support for medical and burial services, cancer programs, and efforts to recruit doctors for critical vacancies. As it turns out, most of those contracts that Doug Collins was crowing about doing away with, getting rid of those outside people, they were actually contracts with so-called service-disabled veteran-owned small businesses, or SDVOSBs, which I don't even know if Doug Collins knew what they were. Companies created by, owned by, as the name says, by service-disabled veterans who frequently hire other veterans to work in those companies, thousands of which will now be shuttered by the Doge Bros and Doug Collins and their scheme to end those contracts. Thank God we had the Washington Post to dig into that and to report what was really going on. After the Post reporting on all of that on Tuesday night, by Wednesday morning, the headline for the new article over the Post read, Under pressure, VA halts contract cancellations in major reversal. Yes, media pressure, light in the darkness, at least for now, saved those critical programs that are far more than, you know, the money sinks that Collins is describing them as. Hundreds of veteran-owned companies performing critical services for other veterans, like support for medical and burial services, cancer treatment and prevention programs, efforts to recruit doctors for critical vacancies at VA facilities that have long had staffing shortages. So yeah, as critical as I am from time to time about the crappy job that the corporate media does in many cases, they still play a very, very important role, especially now in helping to, yes, save our democracy. Which is why what is going on right now at the White House and their disturbing war on a free press and inside corporate boardrooms, boardrooms of some of these corporate media outlets is very, very troubling to me. So on that score, let's take a quick break. We will come back with longtime corporate media veteran turned indefatigable independent media watchdog Dan Frumkin. He will join us next to discuss all of this on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial.
The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. We have been reporting over the past several weeks on this show on the disturbing, if surprisingly underreported, at least as I see it, case of the White House banning the Associated Press, the 178-year-old international news organization, from White House press events and Air Force One. The vindictive, arguably unconstitutional attack on the free press by the Trump White House came after the new president's executive order declaring that the largest peak in the U.S., known for some 10,000 years as Denali by Alaska Natives, would henceforth be known as Mount McKinley, named after a president who had never even stepped foot in Alaska. President Obama, you may recall, had officially changed the name from Mount McKinley to Denali back in 2015, a move long called for by Alaskans and supported even today by the state's two Republican U.S. senators who oppose Trump's renaming it back to Mount McKinley. In that same executive order, Trump also declared that the Gulf of Mexico would heretofore be known as the Gulf of America. AP, in a seemingly non-controversial announcement explaining how its venerable style guide used by media outlets around the globe would handle the two name changes, they noted that since the Alaskan peak was entirely bound by U.S. territory, the outlet would in fact recognize the presidential renaming back to Mount McKinley when referencing that mountain in news stories, but that the Gulf of Mexico, as it has been known for 400 years, being in international waters bounded by countries other than the U.S., where it is still known as the Gulf of Mexico, would still be referred to as the Gulf of Mexico in AP reports, even if the international news organization would also recognize Trump's preferred name for it. But that seemingly reasonable position, following standards that it has used for decades at the AP, earned the immediate wrath of the White House, a ban from the Oval Office and other White House events, and even Air Force One. Arguing the White House ban on AP reporters is a violation of the First Amendment's free speech rights, the AP has now filed a lawsuit against the White House. While some have called for the White House Correspondents Association to ask their members to boycott events where AP was banned, the WHCA was able to only muster up a sternly worded statement decrying the White House's, quote, textbook violation of the First Amendment, charging that, quote, the attempted government censorship of a free press risks a chilling effect on journalists doing their job without fear or favor on behalf of the American people, and calling upon the administration to, quote, immediately reverse course and restore access to AP journalists. Well, the White House has not done so. In fact, they have since doubled down, also banning outlets like the HuffPost from similar events, before then tripling down this past Tuesday with an announcement that the White House pool coverage, as we've known it for decades, would also be changing, as explained by the Trump administration's 27-year-old press secretary, Carolyn Leavitt, during a White House briefing this week.
As you all know, for decades, a group of D.C.-based journalists, the White House Correspondents Association, has long dictated which journalists get to ask questions of the President of the United States in these most intimate spaces. Not anymore. I am proud to announce that we are going to give the power back to the people who read your papers, who watch your television shows, and who listen to your radio stations. Moving forward, the White House press pool will be determined by the White House press team. Legacy outlets who have participated in the press pool for decades will still be allowed to join, fear not, but we will also be offering the privilege to well-deserving outlets who have never been allowed to share in this awesome responsibility.
So she is very proud to announce that. Now, if the other announcement made a week or so ago by Trump's new Secretary of Defense is any indication that the Department of Defense was kicking out well-established news organizations like the New York Times and NBC News from Pentagon media office space to allow far-right propaganda outlets like Breitbart and One America News into those spaces instead, well, we are likely to see correspondents from those pro-Trump political outlets heading up critical White House pool coverage on behalf of all of the media in the days ahead. What does that mean? Well, my guest will be here to help us understand that momentarily. But the very next day after Leavitt's announcement of radical changes at the White House press pool, more destabilizing changes for corporate media coverage of this singularly dark moment in America and world history, this time from the billionaire owner of one of the nation's highest profile and, in my opinion, most critical news outlets. As the editor of the UK's independent nonprofit outlet, The Guardian, explained in her newsletter to subscribers on Wednesday, Jeff Bezos, owner of The Washington Post and the third richest man on the planet, directly intervened for a second time in recent months in his newspaper's coverage, undermining its editorial independence. Bezos announced in an email to staff that he had directed the Post's opinion page editor to limit the section's pieces only to those, quote, in support and defense of personal liberties and free markets, appearing to restrict how the Post's opinion writers can respond to the crisis in the U.S. and the world brought about by Donald Trump's second reign as president. She writes that rather than comply with this politicized edict, the Guardian editor, Betsy Reed, noted the Post's opinion editor resigned. Since the U.S. election, she writes, Bezos has stepped up his direct interventions in the Post's coverage. In October, the Amazon and Blue Origin space exploration company founder, who has billions of dollars at stake in government contracts, told editors at the Post to pull a planned endorsement of Kamala Harris, the first time in 30 years that the newspaper's editorial board had not endorsed a candidate. This, Reed asserts, is what billionaire ownership of news organizations look like. On the heels of Bezos' startling announcement at the paper, which had adopted the slogan "Democracy Dies in Darkness" at the outset of the first Trump administration, many have noted that when Bezos originally bought the previous previously family-owned paper in 2013, he vowed to not interfere in its editorial content. Well, so much for that. Joining us now for insight on all of these jarring disruptions to media coverage as the nation stands on the precipice of a totalitarian destruction of its federal government and its 250-year-old constitutional order is someone who I think is uniquely qualified to offer such insight. Our friend Dan Frumkin served for 12 years as the Washington Post editor of the very popular online White House Watch webpage. Many of those years were during the George W. Bush era, which was itself often staunchly opposed to free media and free speech. Before Dan was unceremoniously dismissed by the Post, even before Bezos's takeover of the paper, despite the popularity of his then groundbreaking online coverage. Frumkin then went on to write for the Huffington Post and The Intercept. He now heads up the independent nonprofit Press Watch newsletter, which he describes as, quote, an intervention for political journalism devoted to encouraging political journalists to live up to the highest standards of their profession, which, of course, we try to do every day here at the broadcast. Dan Frumkin, thank you, sir, for joining us again on the show, my friend.
Thank you, Brad. It's great to be here.
So lots to get to, obviously, but I want to get before we get to the troubling news at your old stomping ground, The Post, and Trump's attack on free speech at AP, I want to first focus on this troubling press pool announcement this week. If I'm understanding it correctly, Carolyn Leavitt is referring to pool coverage of the president by one or two reporters. If that's your understanding as well, can you explain what the White House pool coverage actually is for those who may not understand how it works, why selected pool reporters are so important to everyone's coverage of presidential activities, and of course, your thoughts on what this change to the pool actually portends?
Yes, well, the pool is a handful. It's more than a couple. It's a handful of journalists who have access to the president whenever space is limited. So, for instance, in the Oval Office or in Air Force One, or, for instance, at the cabinet meeting. Mm-hmm. So they can't let everybody who hangs out in the press office, in the press room, follow Trump around. But a handful are selected to do that. And historically, that selection has been by the independent White House Correspondents Association. And they have historically identified the wire services, so AP, Reuters, and Bloomberg, as always being included. And then a rotating crew of reporters and photographers from reputable nonpartisan news organizations. Mm-hmm. So this is relevant because, especially these days, because it's in these intimate locales that Trump tends to be more loquacious and take questions at great length and is a little bit more unguarded. And so it's important that we have, you know, actually reporters who are interested in determining facts rather than just asking him questions that he can hit out of the park because they're actually on his side. So just depressingly, just yesterday, for instance, on Wednesday, I guess, the White House put in Newsmax and The Blaze instead of Reuters and the AP and HuffPost. And so the pool, you know, on the one hand, the pool shouldn't matter that much because access shouldn't matter that much, right? I mean, the best White House stories tend to be written by reporters who don't listen to what the White House says in public, but actually what the White House is doing in private. But in this case, it does, because the reporters in this pool are actually they're not just representatives of the media; they're representatives of the public. They're the only. This is the only opportunity for anybody to actually confront Trump with facts and assertions and to confront him with his lies. It's just so important that the reporters who are chosen to do this are not then at risk of being punished by the White House and being pulled off the beat if they ask tough questions, because then they won't even ask remotely tough questions.
There's also when the president, I think, is traveling most often, isn't there situations where there can really only be a few folks inside or overnight at the White House where there's really only one or two folks who basically document for the rest. You see these reports, you know, your pool reporter sees this and that.
Right.
Are we talking about those moments as well, which would now be dictated by the White House, who gets to cover them in those most intimate instances?
Right. Well, traditionally, there's always, you know, the pool is there in case something happens to the president, as well as just to ask him questions. Mm-hmm. And so the pool will report on comings and goings and sightings and so on. And is always there as a, you know, as a backstop in case news happens. Mm-hmm. And the print reporter, whoever the print reporter is, sends out an email to the press corps.
Right.
So basically, you know, giving the press corps access that they don't have because it's only a few people who have access. Historically, that process has been managed by the White House Correspondents Association. Interestingly enough, the White House Correspondents Association has now backed out of that and said, look, we can't vouch for the accuracy of these anymore because the print reporter might be somebody who's from Newsmax.
Yeah. And that's what really concerns me in those places where you really only have, like I say, one or two people who you know, usually they report sort of just the facts, ma'am, kind of coverage about what mm-hmm. is what they are seeing, what is happening, whatever information they can get without any sort of partisan, you know, colorization of events and so forth. And, you know,
so we can't rely on those anymore at all. Yep.
So, and do you have any confidence that correspondents, you know, from Breitbart and The Blaze and so forth would actually, I mean, the problem is in situations like that, I feel like even if they are straight, you know, documenting the facts, it feels like those organizations are known to be partisan, are known to be far right pro-Trump outlets that we can't even trust what they report, even if they do play it straight.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely a problem. And but I do think that the bigger issue is the questions that are being asked. Mm-hmm. Now, mind you, I don't think that the legacy media outlets have been doing a great job of asking particularly good questions either.
Right.
And I think if they really want the general public to be outraged about this new pool structure, they should probably be doing a better job of presenting a value proposition to the public. Well, by actually doing their job better and by confronting Trump with his lies.
Yep.
In a way that nobody else can possibly do.
Well, confronting them at all, which they do not seem to be doing, which sort of takes us to the second issue I wanted to get here, the matter of the White House specifically barring the Associated Press mm-hmm. from these press avails in the Oval Office on Air Force One, simply because AP is following their decades-old style guide of describing geographical locations by their internationally understood names. Now, they filed a lawsuit charging the White House as violating the First Amendment's protections of free speech. Before we get to what the response should be, do they have a case here, as you see it, specifically one that can pass muster with our, you know, corrupted right-wing Supreme Court, where I suspect this matter will eventually get to?
I'm not a lawyer, but boy, do I think they have a case. I mean, the First Amendment, that's the first one, by the way,
yes.
The First Amendment specifically precludes the government punishing people for protected speech. We're not even getting at the free press element, okay?
Right.
The whole point is the government cannot punish you because of something you say that, you know, that's political.
Mm-hmm.
And this is exactly what is happening now. They've admitted it. They said we're banning the AP because it refuses to say the words, you know, Gulf of America. So they didn't get their very first ruling in their favor, but I think it was just because it was not earth-shatteringly urgent. But I think as this goes up to the Supreme Court, I think even our corrupted Supreme Court can't possibly redefine the First Amendment to make this permissible.
Oh, I think you underestimate our corrupted Supreme Court, Dan.
Well, actually, I mean, the thing is, I think part of why the White House then changed the whole pool structure was to protect itself from that lawsuit. And that might work, in which they say, look, this is no longer an issue of us punishing AP. This is we're doing things very differently now. That's all.
We're doing it differently. We're in charge of who is and mm-hmm. isn't here any given day, basically.
Yeah.
Some have called on the White House Correspondents Association to ask their members to boycott press events until the AP is allowed back in. Apparently, that is not happening. You recently wrote about this at presswatchers.org, explaining why such a boycott, in your opinion, was not the right way forward. There was, and that there was a better way for the press corps to respond. First, why do you see a boycott by all of the media not the way to go, given that Trump craves nothing more than attention and media coverage?
Because then it would just be more of the right wing media showing up. I mean, I don't think that it would prove a point. I think that what would prove a point is for more organizations to be more assertive and more aggressive, and to show why they're there, and to basically dare Trump to ban them too. That's what I want them to do. I want them to get up there and get in Trump's face as on behalf of the public and saying, sir, why are you saying this thing that is demonstrably untrue? Mm-hmm. You know, why are you saying that Ukraine started the war? That is completely not true. Why are you saying this? You know, and when he spouts off about whatever he spouts off about, saying, excuse me, but that's not right. That's not accurate. Because it's astonishing. If you ever just listen to him, mm-hmm. it's one lie after another.
Yeah.
It's nonstop.
Yep.
I mean, it's almost hard to come up with anything he says that isn't a lie. And so the press needs to, I want the journalists to be there and to be asking him tough questions, not to try to do some boycott, which probably wouldn't work because, frankly, media organizations are a bunch of cats. You can't go to them whatsoever.
Do you see any evidence of that happening, that the reporters have become more aggressive, more confrontational?
No, none. I see none. In fact, I'm worried that they are, in fact, being cowed. They're worried if I ask too tough a question, I'll get banned and my boss will be mad at me. I see no sign of it whatsoever. I'm still hopeful, though.
They'll lose their access as well, just the way that AP did, I guess, is what they're... I mean, you actually detail in a piece at Press Watch how the White House press corps should respond to the banning of the Associated Press. This is from a week or two ago, which, of course, is, you know, a thousand years ago in Trump time. But you said there is a way to actually confront specifically, whether it's the president or Carolyn Leavitt, on basically with follow-ups to their lies. Do you ever see, if you can give us an example of how that might work, and do you see any sign of that happening?
Yeah, I think follow-ups are absolutely the key there. I don't, what I'd see instead of follow-ups mm-hmm. is people asking multiple questions. They'll ask let me ask you this question and then five other questions. And they're all sort of open-ended softballs, basically.
Yeah.
And then of course they can't do a follow-up because they just asked five questions.
As if just merely getting a response on record is somehow reporting, is somehow helpful.
Well, especially when you know he's going to lie. I mean, how is this doing anybody any favors to ask a softball question?
Yeah. Well, and you end your that piece. I will link to it, of course, with saying that reporters should, in short, dare Trump to ban them, too. Well, easy for you to say, Mr. Independent nonprofit media outlet. And by the way, the Trump White House is taking all of this, obviously, to extremes we have never seen. But you and I are both old enough to remember when the George W. Bush White House used the wingnut plant in the White House briefing room, the guy by the name of Jeff Gannon, I think it was.
Oh, don't remind me.
Nobody had ever heard of him. Fake news outlet, Talon News, if I recall, to basically softball partisan questions. The Trump administration doesn't even need to do that anymore, it seems to me.
No, they've got a whole room full of ringers now, it seems like.
Finally, Dan Frumkin, what the hell is going on at your old paper, Washington Post? I think the news side, frankly, is still doing a good job in general. But what does the decree this week by the paper's billionaire owner, Jeff Bezos, who has now given millions of dollars to Donald Trump and was on the podium with him during his inauguration, now mm-hmm. calling for an opinion page that only covers topics of basically, a Bezos is choosing, such as, you know, supporting, quote, personal liberties and free markets. What does that mean to the once great paper?
It's a gut punch for everybody who works there and everybody who ever worked there and anybody who loves the Post. I mean, it's just devastating. The he's basically saying, I want my views expressed in these editorial pages henceforth, and opposing views will not be expressed. So it just turns on its head everything that is valuable about an opinion page, where you go for a diversity of views, and you go expecting an independent voice. I mean, at the top of the print editorial column, mm-hmm. the Washington Post, it says an independent newspaper. Yeah. They're going to have to change that. Yeah. This is very, you know, it sounds like really very, very serious libertarianism on steroids. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much, I mean, can you, if you argue for government regulation, are you all of a sudden banned because that's not, you know, you're not supporting the free market? It's incomprehensible to me. And what's going to happen to the columnists already? You know, the irony is that the guy who quit, David Shipley, had already taken the opinion page quite far to the right.
Yeah.
He was previously
the editor of the opinion page. He
was the editor who was picked by Bezos.
Right.
And he had already hired a whole bunch of right wing cranks to write for the paper.
Right.
And then he banned this Ann Telnace cartoon that made fun of Bezos at kissing Trump's mm-hmm. feet. Mm-hmm. So he was no friend to sort of independent progressive voices. But then he quit. The limiting scope of Bezos's orders are terrifying. And you know, and there's still some good columnists over there.
Yeah.
That, you know, Gene Robinson is terrific. Catherine yeah. Rampell is very good. Perry Bacon is terrific. E.J. Dion, although he mm-hmm. doesn't write very often anymore because they've stopped publishing him except for once a month. So there's some terrific people over there, and I don't know what's going to happen to them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you write under those circumstances on an opinion page, much less what he is, you know, if we took him at his word years ago when he bought the paper that he wasn't going to have any editorial interference, you know, what should we now assume about the Washington Post coverage of Jeff Bezos, Amazon, his space company, all of his ventures, and really everything else, since Jeff Bezos himself is so reliant on government approval and Donald Trump yeah. approval for all of his projects.
Yeah, I mean, there's always been this sort of problem hovering over the news side, which is that Bezos has, you know, conflicts of interest with everything. The perception has been that he has not directly interfered with the newsroom, but this is such an overt interference with the opinion side, yep. on which, you know, he legitimately has a little bit more standing in interfering with, but not that much.
Right.
That it's got to be casting a pall over the newsroom, and people must be worried about whether they're going to be, you know, punished for writing stuff that's too aggressive.
Yeah, and join Ann Telnace in on a Substack at this point. I mean, it's troubling, and this is just one paper. This, you know, that's your paper out in D.C., our paper out here in Los Angeles. The L.A. Times is in a similar situation.
Isn't it just terrible how yeah. these two billionaires who were initially seen as you know as saviors, right? Buying these newspapers that were dying, and putting in money and so on, and for a while everybody was really excited about it, and then it turns out you just cannot trust a billionaire. I don't think that they have any. They have the normal sense of consequences that the rest of us have. That maybe you do something and maybe it's not the best thing to do. I think they're completely on a different sort of evolutionary track.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. You just cannot trust a billionaire. Who could have predicted it? Who could have predicted it? Yes. Dan Frumkin, always delightful to get your insights on all of this. I hope people check out your presswatchers.org, sign up for that newsletter there, by the way.
Thank you. I have a new newsletter too, because it's called Heads Up News.
That's what I was going to get to.
Headsupnews.org.
Yeah. Yeah, tell me about it.
Which is intended for a very different audience. This is for people who don't want to have to listen to, you know, follow every single bit of depressing news about the Trump administration, but who are still interested in finding out a little bit about what's going on, and particularly interested in who's resisting. And so this is about, the idea is to give a heads up to people about what people are doing who are fighting back, how that fight is going, and to give people hopefully a reason to keep their heads up. So headsupnews.org.
Headsupnews.org. Maybe we can have you back to talk about that one of these days. You can also find, of course, presswatchers.org. Sign up for both of them and also follow Dan on the Blue Skies now. I believe you are Frumkin over there as well, correct?
I am indeed.
Dan Frumkin, the creator and editor of Press Watch and now Heads Up News, a longtime editor over at Washington Post with great insights about all of that fine mess. Thanks, Dan. Great speaking with you, my friend. Look forward to doing it again soon.
Thank you, Brad.
Thank you.
Heads Up News. I like that idea. Although I should say one thing that you didn't ask Dan is if he thought that people should cancel their Washington Post subscriptions.
Yeah.
And, I've been thinking about
that. Do you think they should?
I don't, actually. I think that, I understand why people might want to send a message, but I don't.
They have lost hundreds of thousands of subscribers in recent days. Since October when Bezos spiked the paper's endorsement of Kamala Harris.
Yeah, and I think that is an example of why it might not actually make much of a difference. It'll definitely hurt the people in the newsroom by lowering the amount of revenue that they can use to hire people and do the kind of news gathering that they can do as a major media outlet. But I don't think Jeff Bezos cares. I don't think he cares about Post subscriptions or about the financing. Mm. Otherwise, all of those subscriptions being canceled way back months ago would have made a difference, and they clearly have not. So, I think boycotting Washington Post does not.
Because he's doubled down since hundreds of thousands of subscribers left, and he says, okay, then
let's
I'm going to make the paper even worse.
Exactly. So I think Amazon is what Bezos cares about. Amazon is his biggest business. Anything else, any of his other businesses are what he is actually trying to protect. So,
Blue Origins, his space thing.
So,
and he wants the government. He doesn't care. You're right. He does not care about Washington Post.
Right.
That's just a trophy on his wall. What he cares about is his other companies and trying to stay in good favor with the government come down on Amazon, don't come down on Blue Origin, et cetera.
Yeah, or like Trump threatened, Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook. Maybe he's afraid of going to prison. I don't know exactly, but I don't think boycotting Washington Post will affect Jeff Bezos at all. Boycotting Amazon, maybe finding other ways to make your displeasure known through, corporate media and other ways, maybe that would work, but that's just my take on it.
You really think we could throw Mark Zuckerberg in jail?
I don't know what Trump will do.
Because I wouldn't necessarily be against that. Anyway, that's just me saying it. Not a Facebook fan here. Okay, let's take a quick break. And Desi Doyen, you got your Green News Report ready to go?
Of course.
That's straight ahead right here on the Bradcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is supporting you and the things that you care about. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. Right now, as much as ever. If you choose to support us, you can do it really easily, safely, and quickly via bradblog.com/donate. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you. Well, another example of why news outlets like Washington Post and New York Times are important. And this sort of, I think, leads into your Green News Report nicely, Des.
Yeah.
Just in from the New York Times. Apparently, the Trump administration is hollowing out FEMA. More than a dozen senior leaders at the disaster agency have been fired or have quit under President Trump just weeks ahead of hurricane season. Fantastic. That'll work out well. All right, let's get to it. Our latest Green News Report.
Officials in Kyiv say that they see it as a good outcome.
Trump White House announces arms for rare earth minerals deal with Ukraine. Spring is getting warmer across the U.S. due to man-made climate change. Plus,
all of this with the global warming and that, a lot of it's a hoax. It's a hoax.
Trump EPA moves to ditch scientific finding that climate change endangers public health.
All of those hoaxes and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I'm starting to think that we as a country don't understand where the real waste, fraud, and abuse in our system really is. So we're looking to save taxpayers some money. And I know, we got the studies that are done. How about we just take $3 billion in subsidies we give to oil and gas companies that already turn billions in profits? How long did that take?
That'll do it. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desiree, it is still February, but out here in Southern California, it has been in the 80s for the last, 3 or 4 days. What the hell is going on here?
Climate change is going on.
Oh, really?
Yes, it turns out spring is getting warmer across the United States, delivering more unusually hot days than in the past due to human emissions of greenhouse gases from the burning of fossil fuels. That's according to a new analysis by nonprofit data firm Climate Central. On average, compared to the 1970s, nearly every U.S. city now sees at least one additional week of unusually hot spring days. It's actually worse in the South. Tampa now gets more than a month of hotter spring temperatures. Warmer springs cause unseasonal drought and early snowmelt, reducing summer water resources for people and crops and heightening the risk of wildfires.
Sounds like a problem.
In international news, Reuters reports that because of the Trump administration's dismantling of the U.S. foreign aid agency, USAID, America's global disaster response teams are now unable to deploy. The highly trained disaster assistance response teams mobilize within 24 to 48 hours to lead the U.S. government's humanitarian response on the ground after major disasters overseas.
Oh, so we can't help people overseas from disasters. Who cares, right? By the way, thank you, Canada and Mexico, for coming to our rescue here in Los Angeles during the fires a few weeks ago.
The Trump administration announced a framework agreement with Ukraine that would give the U.S. access to Ukraine's rare earth minerals, which are critical for electric vehicles, clean energy, and a host of other applications. Ukraine hopes that the deal will ensure continued flow of U.S. military support that Ukraine urgently needs. The draft text reportedly does not include explicit security guarantees from the U.S. The New York Times reports that Trump's Ukraine mineral deal is seen as protection racket diplomacy. Quote, experts cannot recall a precedent for the United States or any other country extracting cash or resources from its own allies during a time of war. Trump effectively confirmed that in a cabinet meeting on Wednesday.
We'll be really partnering with Ukraine in terms of rare earth. We very much need rare earth. They have great rare earth. We have some, but we don't have that much. We need a lot more.
Nice country you got there. Be ashamed if Russia happened to it.
In other news, Mother Jones reports that Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has ended funding for the National Institutes of Health programs and research that protect Americans from the health consequences of extreme weather disasters. Huh. Finally, EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin is privately urging the administration to roll back a scientific finding that the planet-warming greenhouse gases that drive man-made climate change endanger public health and welfare. The 2009 endangerment finding provides the legal underpinning for a host of key EPA climate regulations under the Clean Air Act that have reduced emissions and pollution from motor vehicles, power plants, oil and gas operations, and other industrial sources. overturning the endangerment finding is a key goal outlined in Project 2025. Reversing it would make it vastly easier for EPA to simply revoke all of President Biden's major climate rules. Since 2009, the science has only gotten more overwhelming, linking greenhouse gas emissions to climate change and more frequent, costly extreme weather disasters. But legal experts warn that, science notwithstanding, it may not survive the right-wing supermajority on the U.S. Supreme Court, the most anti-environmental court in the modern era.
And so the endangerment finding drama continues, going on 20 years now. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. Man, that's a terrible song. How cruel of us to put that in people's heads on the way out of this show.
True, but listen, you know, yeah. I think it's super important to underscore what EPA, Trump's EPA, is going to try to do here. I mean, this is a very big deal if they follow through with it, and I really worry about what's going to happen.
Yeah, I do too. Got to get out. Thanks, Des. Our producer, Desi Doyen. Thanks to my guest today, Dan Frumkin of PressWatchers.org and HeadsUpNews.org. And thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program or any other, or just want to hear it again, you can download it for free at BradBlog.com and share it with all your friends, your family, and your enemies. That is made possible by those of you kind enough to hit a donate button to help us remain on your public airwaves, 100% listener supported. Thank you. You can also go straight to bradblog.com/donate.
And you can also come by and say hi to me. I'm at Green News Report on both the Twitters. And, of course, we love the blue skies now.
Yes, we do. You can find me on the blue skies at The Brad Blog. And you can also drop me email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. That's it. We will see you at all of the above. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Right into the danger zone. Good luck, world.